but that would be only for a young bear. An old bear and a big one would be a different name.
Well,
if it was a she bear, it would be a different name. And so it was with a lot of other things. It depended upon the size and as you say in German and so on, they have the masculine and the feminine. So, well, we have it to that extent in English too, you see, like we...
What's the difference in bear between Mukwa and Makus?
Well, that is probably, it'd be about the, probably just the difference in the term there. Mukwa is the ordinary, we used to have in the river, the Indians called it Mukwa Bend. That's what the common name there, but as you see, they have different names there for the kind of a bear that it was. No, if I were younger and could drive around, I'd just, now since I've got pension enough so I don't have anything else to do, anything to worry about, I would just like to get out and talk, although I know that you wouldn't probably find there were a half a dozen people in any one county, but even if you could interview those, and it might give you something that has not yet been published. And I found this out. If you're going to do it, you have to get so that you're, you might say, intimately acquainted, and not too many go, just two or three of you, or just a couple together and talk, just in a casual way. That's the way you gradually get the information you want. I've tried this time and again. If you're out from a newspaper report, try to get it, and there's too many, you don't get as good a story as if you get right out and get to talking with them privately and so on, and just an ordinary conversation, you get what you want better that way.
You mentioned you were a member of the MEA in 1909.
Yeah.
What went on at some of the meetings back then?
Huh?
What went on at some of the meetings in 1909?
Well, they used to have what they call the only meetings that we had were what they call teachers' institutes. You know, I don't have them. I don't think they have them now, do they? They used to have them at. In Saginaw, I've seen as high as 5,000 teachers that would be out, you know. And then they'd have different meetings for the different things at the Teachers Institute. Attilia Fish there at Saginaw and I were great friends. Daisy Howard of Genesee County and I always worked together. And in fact, we went over to Central together two or three different times. Well, Miss Fish, too, went to over there. You see, back in when I started, there wasn't even a high school. You would get over what they call 7th or 8th grade in these little schools, and that's as far as you'd get if you was here. Then we'd have to earn money, and we'd go to either Valparaiso, Indiana, or the Ferris Institute to want to get high school, maybe a little college prep, and then work on gradually, just a little at a time. That's the way you'd work. You'd work in the woods a while and run the river, and then come on back and get a little bit more, and that's the way you... Of course, probably that some of them had money enough to go on through, but I never did. And most of them that I knew, well, I've got pictures of any number of them that worked the same way and worked through. Some became doctors and others lawyers and so on. I planned on being a doctor is what I planned on, but then I liked teaching so well. I always got along well with youngsters. I don't know, I just enjoyed teaching, so that's why I guess I got along. When I got through there, I said, well, you come back, we want some more history. I find out what they're... grandfathers and grandmothers are doing back here. Well, there's a lot to it.
What were conditions like when you taught back 50, 60 years ago?
Well, just a little different days. There was no electricity or anything else back in those days. Nobody knew what a telephone was or anything else. But I actually think sometimes that some of those old schools, some of the things, especially if they're ear-minded, did better than they do today with the old 8th grade schools, because they had a chance to hear the same thing over and over so many times. I taught for about 6-7 years, and well, I had as high as 72 scholars, full 8th grades, one year. And you can imagine a class every 15 minutes all day long there. Consequently, some of the older ones that heard this same thing over and over, they had a chance to keep them by repetition. And of course, when I first started back in Ohio, they didn't even have grades there. They just had like the old McGuffey readers. They called them readers. And you got up about the fourth or fifth reader would be equal to your high school for literature. And the old McGuffey, you'd get the same thing that you'd get on your high school English and so on. They were very difficult there, but they brought out a lot of good scholars that studied those old things, old books and the old Ray's arithmetics and so on. I remember I was going to try to master algebra, and somebody had given me an old Adams algebra. I think it was on about the third or fourth page was the binomial theorem. And I, of course, I didn't understand it. Well, you could earn money, don't you? You'd work in the woods. Well, I'd get another one. Till at last I got 10 different algebras. Then at last you'd find one author that you'd get one that you'd understand. Then you'd get that, and then you'd maybe have to get another book that is a mighty slow process when you try to dig it out for yourself. How much quicker you would have got it if you'd had a good instructor to go to or somebody to explain it, but where you had to master it yourself. Same way like in a lumber camp. I've read past History of the World, and the lumber camps you can read on Sunday, you know. You don't have any time on weekdays or nights because there's so much smoke and dark in the old lumber camps, you couldn't do much reading if you wanted to. But you could read Sundays, and I'd read past History of the World, Gibbon's Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, or something like that as a hobby.
Sunday, wasn't that the day they took the baths?
Huh?
Was Sunday the day that the lumberman...
I was in the lumber woods for one time about 9 months, and I never took a bath once because there wasn't any place to take a bath. Absolutely no place. There was no place to heat any water. And all they had was a big wooden trough and a barrel of water. The bull cook used to bring that barrel of water, and you'd dip in there and you'd pour some water in this trough. Then when the water got so deep in the trough, you'd all wash it. In that, why, there was a plug in the bottom, and you just poured that, and the water ran down on the ground. And there wasn't any place. The bull cook bought the water. There wasn't any. You didn't have a tub. You didn't have anything to take a bath. I've seen people take their underwear and hang it outdoors to try to get some of the lice out of it. There were so many there that they'd beat it and so on. We had a little contest one noon to see who had the most, and I turned one sock down and counted 17. I was about one of the 17 lice just on turning one sock down there. And you know, they got so they didn't bother you only about 9 o'clock at night, just about the time that you...
Why at 9?
Well, that is the time they had a regular feeding time, I think, that they... and then they'd annoy you for a few minutes, for the rest of the day they were pretty well fed, so they didn't bother you. You didn't worry about that, you know. Bed bugs and lice. They had hay when you went into this, you know how the bunks would be up maybe two or three high. All along there, and there was a seat out in front there. You'd go and get some mostly hay right out of the barn or marsh hay, and you just put a little hay there and throw a blanket on the hay with an old gunny sack with a little hay in that for a pillow. And that's what you slept on. Well, I never changed that in 9 months, so there was a nest of mice right under my pillow, and I never bothered them, and they never bothered me either. I could hear them, you know, kind of squeaking around and so on. Healthy, you never sick a day, you know, you're feeling good, so on. I remember one night I thought it's going to be my last. It's Christmas Eve. They were celebrating in this lumber camp. They had out, this was out in New Mexico I'm talking about now. I was working out there. They had a saloon and a whorehouse running in connection with the lumber camps, and there would be probably about 150, 175 men at each of these camps. Well, I was at Camp 7, it was Camp 6, and off 3 or 4 miles in another direction, a different camp. Well, these fellows had been out. I never cared anything about hanging around the beer gardens or these other places, so I was maybe about the only one who was doing much reading. But anyhow, the boys began to come in along 1 o'clock in the morning. That's pretty well loaded. And there was another fellow on the upper bunk. They wanted him to get out and go back out, back over to the beer garden again. And he didn't want to go. And these fellows had been pretty good cowpunchers in the time. They could throw a rope. And they were over there and they kept trying to throw a rope. They tried to catch his arm or his foot. If they could have got a foot or anything up, they'd have roped it and pulled him right out of his bunk. But said, well, if we don't get out that way, we know how to get you out. And damn if they didn't set his bunk afire. Well, they were loaded enough, just tar paper roof. The flames was going right up to the roof, and I could see that they didn't care. They had burnt the shack down. So I just, here was this pail where we washed there, this bucket, you know. I just reached up there and took a pail of water, and I swatched it up there and put the hay fire. He was right by his feet, you see, and he just kicked it right over into the other bunk, which happened to be an end, and there was all that loose hay burning. Well, I put it out, but the fellows was in the bunk below, were trying to sleep. And then, of course, this water ran right down through on them, and then they were going to lick me because I had wet them. I didn't care either whether the thing burned. It looked like it was going to be a free-for-all there, shooting the ground. And we had a wild night that night. But they quieted down after a while, but I thought somebody was going to be killed. The one fellow would be a man among men. Give me a knife or a gun. No, he just wanted to. He didn't have neither the knife or the gun, and he wanted to fight that.
Big rattle going on, the place burning.
Yeah, well, there was. Usually, as always, with their fists, nobody would get hurt too much, and battling with their fists.
Were there a lot of fights?
Yes, there were a lot of them. Quite a few. I've got. Well, there's a little notch right out of this ear here where the bullet went right that close. Out through there, we were celebrating Easter. As I said, I was a wheel loader. And right in the camp, they had anybody that talked English or Spanish was in one camp. And then if you talked any of the Slavish languages or the Russians, Slavish, Poles, and so on, were into this other camp, there'd be just a little bit of difference there. Well, as I said, the Teamsters and all of these fellows here, and they were celebrating it. Most of them are from the old country, so their Easter comes, I think it's 11 days or about 2 weeks after ours, that old style, you know, they have the young style and the old style. But it was 2 weeks after our Easter. And I had a fellow by the name of Paddy Lane that had been helping me load wheels at the time. And Paddy, of course, if there was any place to get a drink, that's where Paddy would be. So he was in there, and he'd had several too many drinks. He was lying on the table laid out, and somebody rolled him off the table, and he never woke up. He just dropped right over onto the floor. Well, these Russians were great checker players. Some of them had been in the army, and they could play checker and chess. They were good. They wanted me to get into a game, so I was playing one, and this fellow could talk English. And he kept saying, there's going to be trouble here in a few minutes. He knew he could understand everything that was going on. They were all drinking heavily. They were celebrating their Easter. Last one of these big husky Russians tried to put me down. He pulled me away from the game and tried to break my back, you know, that break. And I was pretty husky. He couldn't get me down, or I couldn't get him down. But for 4 or 5 minutes that we tried that back-breaking stuff. At last, then, I went back to the game, and he reached in his pockets, and they paid out there in gold, in $20 gold pieces. He'd reach in his pocket, and he'd get a handful of gold pieces, and he'd just throw them on the floor. The money was rolling, and then he'd reach in, get another handful of money, and throw it on the floor. Well, and of course, he was wild. About 5 or 6 minutes later, he fell out of his pockets. This damn fool just woke up, and then I could see, because I didn't understand, he couldn't talk English, but he said, I've been robbed. The damn fool had thrown his money away. Then he accused the Austrians, I think it was. He accused the Austrians of the ones that, I could see that right then and there. Well, the Austrians started going out the door, and he got a knife, a stiletto about that, ooh, and that you poor much, you know, that swear word that they used there. He was going to kill somebody. Well, he saw he wasn't going to get anybody with the knife, and he reached to his bunk, and he got that revolver. He was going to shoot these fellows that he claimed had robbed him as they were going out the door, and it was a self-cocker. She brought it back this way to shoot, and that's when she went off, and the bullet went right by my ear there and right up through the bunk and out through. And then they was going to put a stop to him, some of these other Russians, and they grabbed cant hooks, and they went after him. Most of them done military. One of the finest battles you ever saw there with cant hooks. One trying to bat one another's brains out. They'd parry, they'd hit them that, and they'd parry it off there and go to jab that way. They'd all had military training, and that clash of cant hooks and everything had going. In the meantime, the foreman and the whites, the foreman of the whites and so on, he came, they had guns coming in there, and they put a sub, well, Ennis, what have they been trying to kill you? They hadn't tried to kill me at all. was over this fellow that throwed his money away, and they never got him. He got up in the hills. They tried to find him, and they couldn't get him, but he came back in the night sometime. So the next day we were cutting, they were cutting pine about 5 miles from the camp. And I was, at that time, down where the wheel loaders were. They put them in 3- and 5-load bunches, you know, and where they could be wheeled on out to the skidways where the railroads were. And here comes the United States Marshal and another deputy. He says, "Your name, Ennis?" "Yeah." "Well," he says, "I understand that had a little trouble up at your camp last night." "Well," I said, "they were just celebrating Easter." And so, well, he says, "Where's the fellow that was doing the shooting?" "Well," I said, "I think he's up in there. He's a sawyer. You can see the trees are going down. That's hard work." Well, wasn't long he came there, and here he has a pony. And had a chain about as long as from here over to Ruth. Had that fellow chained with the handcuffs back and chained to him, and he had this other deputy. And I said, "You talk about yourself being a gunman. Put a man there and have him walk, and he's going to walk 8-10 miles out to the..." He didn't have any jail, and just have him down to headquarters. But he says, "You have to appear tomorrow." Well, I said, "Why do I have to appear?" "Well, you're a witness. He's the one that tried to shoot you." I said, "He didn't try to shoot me." So they had to let me off, and I had to walk down to headquarters. Come to find out, this had been one of Teddy Roosevelt's rough riders. He'd been one of his rough riders, one of those, this United States Marshal. You see, at that time, New Mexico and Arizona were territories, and they only had these, what they call U.S. Rangers, you know, and they were gunmen, they were husky men. Well, I says, "You're a brave man now." I says, "Go to take that poor Russian and chain him up and bring him down there." But he says, "I don't take any chances on anyone now." I says, "Why not?" Then he trailed about down farther back in the Pecos Valley. He says, 6 of them went after a horse thief one day. They got the horse thief. And, you know, in those days, they wear guns on them, and then they have guns on their saddle. Said they were all just joking and so on, and this horse thief that they had reached over and jerked a gun out of the saddle and held the 6 of them up quicker than a flash. It meant death if they had them before they wasn't expecting it, you see. And made them get off of their ponies, and there was a little pinyon pine there, and they had handcuffs, of course, these deputies did, and they handcuffed every man right around that pine tree. He handcuffed them there, and there's a row of men. There they couldn't get away. There they were, and he rode off. And he said about 36 hours later, he said, they thought that they're all going to die from thirst. Here was some squaws came along, and they managed to rescue him. He said, "I don't take a chance on anybody from now on," he says, after that. So that is why he was so careful.
Do you recall his name at all?
Huh?
Do you remember his name at all?
Oh, the fellow that was doing the shooting, I remember that, was Alexandria Smuikov. Now, if you know what nationality, would you know what that Alexandria Smuikov? That's what the way they pronounced it, Smuikov. I think he was a Russian. Huh?
A Russian.
That's what I figured, he's a Russian. Because they were talking, you know, at that time or about that time, and it was just about over or something. They'd had a war with Japan. They settled the Treaty of Portsmouth here in this country. It was right about that time.
You know,
the Japanese-Russian war there. With Alexandria Smuikov.
How many of these articles have you done now?
Well, I think the last one is 26. Back in those days, the school director in these little schools gave the examination as to whether you were teaching. Well, here was Cole as a college graduate from Maine. Came over here to John Weed, and he'd probably gone through the first reader or something like that. And he got a primer, and he says, "Can you read this sentence? I see a dog," or something. Of course, Cole read it. Why, he says, "You lose a pass." That's all it was, just one sentence. That was the qualification. But that was actually the way that you'd go around to the school board members, and they'd give you the examination, and if you looked all right, well, you got the job, and if you didn't, you did. But he told me that's what happened right up here on the shore. They just gave him the books that he was qualified to teach you. We've got stone here. Do it. Well, I said the stone wasn't... What the... Oh, that. Then we'll get the state jail. We got the state jail. No hill, no divorce place. Best rock in the state for building roads. Well, then he came to the school where I was teaching. Of course, all the people gathered there, they wanted to hear what the geologist told us. That was the geology of this locality, and that's what I was giving some of the youngsters. It out of a book, but what the state geologist, they were the